movies and booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Enjoy alcohol sensibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.
We are joined once again by Fionnuala Jones, Esther McCarthy and Dean McGuinness. Good afternoon to you all.
Hello.
Hello, Sean.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, that's good. You're all there. That's good to establish that. So, Dean, is one of the IPAs you're talking about today actually called another bloody IPA?
It is. I love it because one of the things is people get very cynical about the fact that everybody has an IPA. I think there's only one brewery in the country that absolutely refuses to brew an IPA. They're doing a play on words. It's Cotton Ball Brewing Company down in Cork in Mayfield. And what they've done is they've brewed an IPA with blood orange. So
right.
That's where the bloody is coming from in the another bloody IPA.
Ah.
It's also a play on the fact that everybody has one. And yeah, we're comparing that with a beer from the other side of the country up in Donegal, Letterkenny. Kinnegar have brewed an IPA called Rust Bucket, which is a rye IPA. So it's brewed with rye as part of the grain bill.
Right. OK. But is there any possibility we may have reached peak IPA in a bit like the Twins? There's just too much of it now.
Yeah, well, it's kind of one of my bugbears when I'm talking to people about craft beer is I say, oh, do you drink craft beer? And they say, yes, I drink IPA. And they're, do you drink other craft beer? And I say, yes, I have drunk another IPA.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, there are other craft beers out there, yeah. You know. What has happened, it is by far and away the most popular style of craft beer in the world. And what's happened is the style has splintered. So literally everything with the style is built around the idea that it showcases hop character. It's meant to be a pale ale. It's meant to be around 5 to 7.5%, and it's meant to be brewed with ale yeast. So a classic IPA has those characteristics. But what they've done is they've brewed IPAs that aren't pale anymore and done black IPAs, brown IPAs, white IPAs, red IPAs. They've done IPAs that don't have the standard alcohol strength. So you've got session IPAs at 3 to 5%. And double IPAs at 7.5 to 10%, and then sometimes IPAs going stronger than that. And they've even played around with the yeast. So you now have IPLs, which are India Pale Lagers. So what's happened is, as people are doing different IPAs, they do more and more different interpretations of the style. And if you love the style, it's great. It means you've got a huge amount of variety. The shame of it would be if people only ever drank IPAs, they'd lose out on loads of other styles. But it's definitely worthwhile exploring as many IPAs as you can. There's
sure.
There's loads of variety and diversity out there.
The interpretations, though, Dean, have they been extended into almost meaninglessness? At least you're producing something that's not really an IPA, it's something else.
In some instances, yeah. The second beer that we're doing is a Stag Rua. It's a classic Irish red ale. And when we talk about that, we'll talk about how the Irish red ale has almost been dragged towards IPA by some breweries. So you end up with a beer that is kind of neither an Irish red ale nor an IPA. It's somewhere in between. You can have that to a certain extent. Now, when it comes to the style descriptions, when you've got total geeks like myself, people obsess about it. So one of the things that we would do is kind of drink different styles side by side to identify the exact differences between them. But at the end of the day, it's a social construct. It's what people believe that the style is. It's not kind of defined by science. It's what people believe it is.
Right.
It's kind of the difference between history and science, insofar as in wine, you can say that a Chardonnay is a Chardonnay because you can genetically prove that the Chardonnay grape is a Chardonnay grape. But with beer styles, what it is this is an IPA because it is similar to the style of beer that emerged in the late 1800s that was of this style and has followed this pathway through time and has varied a little bit over time and is now this way. Stout used to be a strong beer. All stouts were strong beers, and now because probably the most famous stout in the world is around 4%, it's no longer a strong beer. It's a black beer. So different styles kind of evolve over time and the interpretation thing, which means it's great because when you're talking about it on the radio every few years, you get to talk about something different.
Yeah, that took a far more philosophical turn than I thought it was going to. As far as you know, is there a beer called Social Construct? I'd love if there was.
Oh, I haven't come across that one, but that sounds cool.
that would sound fantastic. And the two movies today, Esther, I suppose people would be certainly aware of the first one, Judas and the Black Messiah, a very political movie.
Yeah, and in a year like no other, we've two proper films this week. We've a proper new Irish release, and we've a proper award season Oscar-y type movie, which is, of course, Judas and the Black Messiah. It's really good, this. I was already well on board with Daniel Kaluuya being one of the best actors working anywhere at the moment, but he surely proves that here. He's really good. It's about a kind of a mad story about a young petty criminal who's tasked with infiltrating the Black Panthers in the late 1960s. They'd been set up, of course, in 66, but by this time, they were starting to gain real traction, both among the Black American community and beyond, largely because of this character, Fred Hampton, who was just a brilliant orator. He knew how to rouse a crowd. He had a soundbite for every meeting, and he was really generating a movement that had already been established by the Black Panther founders. So the FBI were quite scared of this under J. Edgar Hoover at the time, and they decided to infiltrate this character, Fred Hampton, and see what they could find out about him. And they got a young guy to get involved in doing that.
Yeah, and The Winter Lake, as you say, an Irish film.
A new Irish film, although I have to say, cheers out to Gráinne Humphreys and everyone at DIFF who have been beaming brand new Irish cinema virtually through the Dublin International Film Festival to households all over the country this week. And I think it's been a huge success in really difficult times. And there's still plenty to check out actually over the weekend there if you're starved of brand new world cinema or Irish films. But here we have one as well, a proper rental. This would have been in the cinema, so it's quite sad. It was acquired by Wildcard Distribution, but they have decided to go on digital platforms with it. It's a first feature by a guy called by the name Phil Sheeran, but more interestingly, it's written by David Turpin, who wrote a haunted house movie a few years ago called The Lodgers. It was a small, low budget film that was shot here in. Oh, it's a house famous for being the most haunted house in Ireland. I just can't remember the name of it, but people know of it. And they actually shot the film there. But it really grew legs, that movie, The Lodgers, internationally. And I think it just shows what kind of genre filmmakers here can do on a budget and how much potential there is now internationally for that to travel, you know.
Okay, all very interesting stuff. Our hashtag, by the way, this is based on an item that Graham did during the week about why there's so many different sorts of knots. It's knotted movies. So you'd have Star Wars Episode 4, A New Rope, or of course, Notting Hill. That's a very popular one too. There are a gazillion of them in front of me at the moment. Fionnuala Jones, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Sean, how are you?
Not too bad. Now, one of your stories this week is that Jennifer Garner, did she basically, was she on the verge of retiring a few years ago?
Yes. So basically, her former agent, Patrick Whitesell, he used to represent herself and her ex-husband, Ben Affleck. He basically issued her an ultimatum at one point regarding the role of Dr. Eve Sachs in, what is that movie, Dallas Buyers Club? Amazing movie. Fairly small role in comparison to Matthew McConaughey and the others in it. But her agent kind of turned to her and said, this is going to be a call about one or two things. You either do this little movie, as she says herself, which is gasp because it ended up being a not so little movie, or it's going to be a call about you retiring. And she said in this interview with the Hollywood Reporter that she realized then that she'd asked enough of her representatives at the time. They were working really hard to try and get her these roles. And her quote herself, which I thought was funny, she said, I had said no to everything and kept getting pregnant. So she said, I also knew that I didn't want to be done acting.
Well,
so
that means she wasn't
okay,
saying
I'll
no to everything if she kept getting pregnant.
Very fair point. Very fair point.
Right. Okay. But she did do it, obviously. So so in a way, was she kind of, even though he's her ex-agent, she sounds like she was a bit thankful to him for forcing her to do it.
Yes, I'd say so. I mean, like, what a movie. And she hasn't really done much since. I mean, Esther might correct me on that. There's nothing coming to my mind. She seems to be doing a lot of kind of influencey stuff on Instagram. But she did say at the time when this question was put to her, she just had her last child and Affleck was really busy with Fargo. So she just said her brain was kind of like, she didn't really know what to do. And she just said she knew she didn't really want to give up work. And she kind of realized that this was maybe a make or break decision of her totally leaving Hollywood. But yeah, she was also very complimentary of Matthew McConaughey in it. And I'd forgotten they actually starred alongside each other in Ghosts of Girlfriends Past, which is in a league of its own in comparison to Dallas Buyers Club, in the sense that it is very, very bad.
All right. How interesting. Never seen it. Never will. And we will be talking actually about the aforementioned Matthew McConaughey in just a little bit. Yeah, I did look it up. She seems to have done like a few voiceover type stuff. I don't know if she's done much on screen work. The one I looked her up, I was interested to see the award she's won. In 2005 at the People's Choice Award, she won the award for Favourite Hair. So,
what an award to win.
Award. That's the big one, really. That's what they all aspire to. So, Dean, old Bean. Which beer are we going to talk about first?
Okay, so what we're going to do is a compare and contrast on the first two beers. So we've got Kinnegar from Letterkenny. It's a brewery that's set up with coming up on a decade now up in Letterkenny in County Donegal, and Cotton Ball, a little bit newer in Mayfield, County Cork. Both of them are IPAs, but both of them are a twist on the IPA style. So with Kinnegar Rust Bucket, it's a rye IPA. Normally beer is brewed with malted barley. And in the case of this, the malt, the grains that are used are malted barley with also rye used. And rye gives the flavour, probably the thing that most people would be familiar with in terms of rye would be rye vita, the kind of rye bread. And that has a slightly spicy grain flavour. The Cotton Ball IPA is brewed with blood orange, so you get a kind of a jelly marmalade type sweetness. Now, tasting both of them, what you've got with both of them, there's a kind of a citrus fruit backbone. So you've got mandarin orange, a bit of lemon, a bit of lime in both of them. With the Rust Bucket IPA, there's a kind of a range of different other aromas that are coming through from the hops. So you've got a flavour called geranial, which is rose petals or floral character. The citrus flavour comes through, the spice comes through as well. And then you've got a kind of a caramelly sweetness on the malt flavour. So you've got a kind of a double balance going on with the Rust Bucket. You've got hot bitterness balancing the sweetness. You've got the fruit flavour balanced with spice, and overall, absolutely delicious beer. They've done a great job on it. Kinnegar started out as a really small brewery, like a what would be called a nano brewery, brewing just a few hundred litres at a time. And they've added to it, and now they're developing again and putting in a tank called a cool ship, which is to beer geeks incredibly cool. It allows them to develop farmhouse beers and sours. On the other side, you've got Cotton Ball, another bloody IPA, really kind of luscious, full fruit flavours. So you've still got citrus, so it's coming through as kind of sweet mandarin orange, lemon, lime. It tastes almost like jelly marmalade. And then the undertone of malt character is digestive biscuit, toasted bread, malt sweetness. Again, the bitterness to balance, because you're going to get this hop character, which will bring bitterness and also hop flavour. But very interesting to taste them side by side, because you can kind of identify flavors that they have in common and then identify where they're going in two different directions. They've got a lot in common. They've got a lot that pulls them in two different directions. But if you're looking to play around with IPAs, they're two good IPAs to put side by side and just do a compare and contrast.
Precisely on the question of another bloody IPA, Ian, who's in Tuam, says, Christmas 2019, my sister, who lives in Cork, gave me a selection of beers to taste. Among them was another bloody IPA, which I loved. Unfortunately, I haven't seen it anywhere since. Any idea where I might find it in the Galway Tuam area?
Oh, good question. Sometimes the breweries can be a little bit regional in terms of where they're doing it. So I tried to get beers from two ends of the country, and Galway Tuam is right dead in the centre of the two areas that I've got.
Sorry, Ian.
I picked up these in carry out in Carrigaline. I was down in Cork and picked up the beers from there. Get on to at Cotton Ball on Twitter, and they'll give you an idea as to whether there's some stockists close by in Tuam.
Yeah, or maybe, yeah, maybe order it online is probably the best bet, I'd say. There mightn't be anywhere within 5 kilometres to do that
at the moment. Beer Club or Martin's in Fairview are doing nationwide distribution. Beerclub.ie are doing nationwide distribution. A lot of the good craft beer off licences, McHugh's, Redmond's, all do nationwide distribution. So we should be able to get it that way as well.
Somebody else says, a few friends have bought some ultrasonic cleaners from Lidl that they use for Guinness, which supposedly makes it like traditional draft pints. I've seen a few videos of it, and it certainly seems to have an impact, but does it actually have any more impact than if you were to just tap the side of the glass with a spoon or something?
Right. Now, I'm going to use the word that I'm not allowed to use, which is mouthfeel. And I'm going to use it repeatedly now. So apologies to everybody in the studio who doesn't like my use of the word mouthfeel. One of the things about Guinness is the way that it pours, it has nitrogen in the beer, in draft beer, and that settles out and it gives that creamy head. So it gives a very distinct texture, really creamy head. It's a relatively light beer. So it does change the character of the beer. Now, the thing about it is that there's a specific can that Guinness has marketed for this kind of method of pouring. You have the Nitro can, which is the draft Guinness can, which has a widget in it, which releases an explosion of nitrogen so that you get the kind of draft pour. But what they're talking about is a jewellery cleaner, and Guinness released a thing about 10 years ago that was Guinness branded and that was about five times the price of a jewellery cleaner. And it's the same idea. It's just a water bath and you put the glass into it. And if it's the right type of beer, what will happen is that the vibrations of the sonic waves will cause the nitrogen in the beer to kick out. And it does kick into a normal nitrogen, the kind of 2 minute settle for a draft beer. If you do it with a carbonated beer, there's a good chance that you'll have beer going all over your table, all over your carpet, possibly shooting up into your ceiling if it's a particularly carbonated beer. So if you are planning on doing it, make sure you use the right beer or contact your divorce lawyer before your wife sees you doing it.
There you go.
Because you will get in serious trouble.
Right, okay. Mouthfeel followed by creamy head. You're doing this for a bet, aren't you, Dean? Esther, what movie would you like to talk about first?
Let's do. I'm going to keep calling this Jesus and the Black Messiah, and that's a totally different movie, okay? But let's do that one.
All right, Judas and the Black Messiah after this.
You're Fred Hampton.
You must be the preacher man.
Well, I'm a Fanny Hall's paper. Funnies, especially.
My flag is some mother. Comrade. Take it easy, comrade.
It's just up there to remind us of our southern heritage.
When I look at that, I don't see no flag hanging. I see my uncle hanging from a tree, and a bunch of white devils like y'all smiling around his butt.
Hey, who the f*** you think you're talking to?
Well, hey, cool it.
In our house.
Hey, cool it. Look, we oppressed your people for a long time.
I didn't oppress shit. And my folks grew up poor.
Yeah, that's right.
They were sharecroppers.
AKA the overseer.
What if the overseer had banded with the slaves and cut the master's throat? What then, comrade?
There you go. No call for that kind of dirty language. Right, that's Judas and the Black Messiah. And you already gave us a kind of a taste of it, Esther, in the sense of it's about the FBI sending in a mole or somebody to betray them.
Yeah. So it's just a young guy, a guy by the name of William O'Neill, who's played by Lakeith Stanfield here, who's brilliant. He was a kind of petty criminal. He was picked up in Chicago one night after stealing a car, but he ended up in a lot of trouble because he also had a fake FBI badge. So that's not where you want to be going. So the Fed saw an opportunity in this, I guess. They were getting very spooked at the young black leader by the name of Fred Hampton in the city, in Illinois, who was really getting traction in his speeches among the African American community, but also tellingly beyond that. So the FBI were very scared of this, and they saw in this young, naive man, I guess, an opportunity to exploit him. So they threatened to throw the book at him. And, you know, unless he goes undercover for the feds. And this guy was only 17, Sean. He did not know what he was getting himself into. And also, he's a kind of a master of disguise. He's kind of, because he's a petty criminal, he's used to bluffing and, you know, staying off the grid and stuff like that. So he's quite street smart. But in terms of the political implications of what he was getting involved in, hadn't a clue. And so he joined the Black Panthers, determined to stay in the background and stay out of trouble. But he ended up becoming a member of Hampton's security team and getting very close to the leader. So suddenly you have this young man who's in way, way over his head. So that's kind of the idea of this film, which I would call maybe a glorious mess, because tonally it is bombastic, like, and it shouldn't work. It doesn't have a subtle bone in its body, and it is not the smoothest direction ever. It's directed by a guy by the name Shaka King. But the choices they've made in the making of this actually make the film better. Like, it's just, it's a big, muscular kind of film, you know, and very much relying on the actors to carry it. And by gosh, they do. Like, when I tell you Jesse Plemons is the third best performance in this film, that'll tell you what you're getting from Daniel Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield. They are just terrific here. And it's very, yeah, it's kind of old fashioned filmmaking in a way, you know. It's that's the basic setup. I think people who will have an interest in history in this time know how it ends, and it's not good. And also, maybe without forcing the point, I think it's very much a period film, and it's not trying to do the Oscar baiting thing, but it just manages to prove how we could end up back here again and what that would lead to, you know. So okay. I think it's just very, it's a very dramatic and memorable finale, of course. And it is relevant to today. I think it really is. Yeah. Also, the best score I have heard in a movie in Yonks. Two proper jazz musicians, guys by the name of Mark Isham and Craig Harris. And the score in this is absolutely fantastic. Like, I've it ordered, I'm buying it. It's a really, really good piece of work. But can we just get to Daniel Kaluuya's performance? It deserves all the fuss it's getting. You know, he's marching, like, he was so good in Get Out. I know he'd been acting for years before that, but that was my first big experience of him in Jordan Peele's film. I just went, oh my God, who is this guy? And, you know, he's mixed it up since. He's done Marvel, he's done, you know, drama. But here, I think it's a film that just really relies on you buying into how dangerous this young man, Fred Hampton, feels to, you know, the FBI. And Martin Sheen pops up here as well, actually, as J. Edgar Hoover.
Wow.
A bit miscast, maybe, when you know what a nice man he is in real life. But he is doing his best to be weird. And, you know, I think Kaluuya, though, I mean, the film is much more than solely his performance, but it is an incredible performance.
Okay.
I think it's a given that he's going to get an Oscar nomination. There's talks of it being a supporting actor nomination, which I think would be really cheeky, because this is very much a co-lead, even though it's told through the young man's eyes. It's very much a co-lead performance, and it'll be interesting. Like, you can campaign, and sometimes films do, if it's a very strong supporting performance, they'll campaign for supporting performance, knowing that it's a shoo-in, you know. But that's not for them to decide, even though they campaign that way. The Academy ultimately decides. So I'd see potentially a Best Actor nomination for Daniel Kaluuya.
Yeah, I'd be interested just a little bit about the politics surrounding that, because there seemed to be, as you know, there was a little bit of controversy about Kaluuya getting the role because he's not American, and Fred Hampton is a kind of a sacred figure among the African American community, and the Academy might not want to step on anybody's toes if it's, you know, there's too much of a thing made about that.
Yeah, I think once you see this, like, he really brings a man to life. I think as well, he shows him, you know, these are intellectual people. These aren't just troublemakers, you know. They're quite sophisticated people. And he's very articulate. I think when any African-American sees how much Kaluuya brings the character to life in this film, they'll be happy.
Yeah. Where can this be seen?
It's on numerous platforms. Rental. You'll pay for this one. It's 16, 17 euro around that mark.
Right, okay.
And you'll find it on, there's loads of platforms, but it's Sky Store is one, and Microsoft, you'll find it there as well.
Right. Listen to this. Valerie in Dunboyne said, I went, she's in Dunboyne now, she wasn't before. She says, I went to high school in the Bronx with Will Burson, who co-wrote Judas and the Black Messiah. Also in my class was the violinist for the Vitamin String Quartet, who did the soundtrack for Bridgerton and was recently written up in Rolling Stone, and one of the NASA engineers who landed Perseverance on Mars a couple of weeks ago. Our class social media group has been going mad while we all bask in our former classmates' glory, and they are all so humble in their replies and deserving of their achievements. It's been a good month for the class of 94. Says Valerie.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Isn't that amazing?
You have to plan a school reunion when the pandemic is over, Valerie. That's for sure.
Well, Valerie's clearly American, though. An Irish person would never even admit to that unless they had cured cancer or something themselves. And Fionnuala, there is a film that Jennifer Garner's in on Netflix at the moment called Yes Day. Apparently, so.
Yes. Sorry, yeah, I had heard about that. I'm not sure I'm the target audience for that. It's about kids having the full day to say yes, 24 hours to say yes. Not really sure that's for me, but I'm sure, like, she will continue to have nice hair and live her life, and I'm happy for her.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, speaking of people who love their life, and we did mention him already, Matthew McConaughey is, he's been hinting this for a while. Are the hints getting bigger now that he's going to run for office someplace?
Yeah, they're definitely getting bigger, I think. So he talked about running for Texas governor back in November 2020. He was speaking to Hugh Hewitt, and he said, kind of similar enough to what The Rock said about running for president, he said it would be up to the people more than it would be me. And in the same breath, called politics a broken business, and said it would only garner more interest when it redefines its purpose. He's kind of come back again and said that he's seriously considering it now on another podcast, as all celebrities do now with their announcements. He said he's looking at it again, questioning what his leadership role would be, asking what he'd have to teach and share, and kind of just looking at the next chapter of his life. Yeah, there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
If he is to run, he will run against Greg Abbott, who's a Republican. He's up for re-election. There's a lot of speculation as to around whether he'll run as a Republican or a Democrat because of kind of certain things he said in the past about gun control and other things. He seems to be very centre-leaning in terms of his political views. So who knows? We shall see. That would be an interesting election run for sure, though.
So he's steering a middle course because he's being cute about it. Maybe he'll go as a non-party person. Still, though, would you vote for him? He's kind of up himself.
But I mean, like, the McConaissance, like, his general face, I might be willing to overlook some serious issues.
Yeah, because of his general face.
Just to look at him. Yes.
A face he stares at in the mirror 100 times a day, I'm absolutely sure. And kind of does a little pointy motion when he
does
it.
And he'd be right to.
Right. Oh, I say. Okay. All right. Well, that if you can tolerate that, you'd probably tolerate anything. Right. Okay. We do have to take a commercial break. Another beer and more gossip and another movie after this. 53106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on Newstalk. This week we have with us Dean and Fionnuala and Esther. Esther has already told us about Judas and the Black Messiah, which she's liking very much. Dean has talked about a couple of Irish IPAs and we'll be talking about a bit more. And Fionnuala has been talking about Jennifer Garner, about which she knows nothing, it seems. Somebody else has texted in to say, Gary, Jennifer Garner also got her ears pierced for the first time. Is Fionnuala aware of this breaking news?
Yes, I am. She said in an interview with People, I think. She said she didn't do it for years because her dad wouldn't approve. And even now, she still asked him if it was okay. She's 48. Like, it's, I don't know. Good for her, though. Like, it's the only way is up, clearly, for her.
Well, indeed. Her father must be a frightening man. Danielle wants to know, did Esther review Raya and the Last Dragon yet? Is it for smallies or would 12 or 14-year-olds enjoy it? I knew I could Google it, but I'm driving now and used a voice note to send this message. So I'm hoping my words are not mixed in translation. Apologies if this reads very offensive. Blame Siri if so, says Danielle. Siri's done an excellent job there, Danielle. So Esther, can the older ones watch it?
Don't Google, Danielle. You did the right thing. Keep driving.
Yeah.
It's suitable for young ones. I think she's asking there, is it for slightly older children? And I think it's perfectly placed for slightly older children. I would be looking at the age 11 to 14, maybe. Younger kids will get it, but I think it's actually made for that age group who don't get enough animated storytelling, I think, actually. So
okay,
it's
good.
Nice that it's there. And when I tell you it's voiced by people like Awkwafina, you'll kind of know the demographic there, you know.
Alan says, finally got around to watching Ma Rainey's Black Bottom last night. I'm surprised how mixed the reviews I've heard were. I thought it was great. I hope Chadwick Boseman gets an Oscar for it, says Alan. So there's one in the positive column. Becca says, I watched The Dig, a movie Esther reviewed some weeks ago. Can't understand why it had this muggy, browny haze to it. The whole movie was like it had a filter on. Is this a new thing or was my TV in fact broken? I think that's just the past, Becca. It was brown back then. Not a well-known fact. And somebody already Dean was talking to us about Rus Bucket. Michael in Derry says Rus Bucket's one of my favourite beers. Also Black Bucket and Bucket and Spade by Kinnegar. God, there's a bit of a theme there. I heard recently that Kinnegar have brought out an Imperial Stout but can't get it in my local off-licence. Does Dean know it?
They have a superb range of beers and they're incredibly creative in what they're doing. One of the things about it is they're bringing out so many beers and they do such small batch beers that one of the things is that people look for a very specific beer and then they pull their hair out because it's either a limited edition or it's a seasonal release or whatever. Rus Bucket seems to be available most all of the time, but you need to check with off licenses if you're looking for a specific Kinnegar. It's the one that you look for might either be seasonal or might not be available at that time.
Yeah, good point. Right, tell us about the second or indeed third beer today.
Yep, so we're looking at a beer from the Gaeltacht region. I think we're doing beers for the run into St. Patrick's Day. It'd be a shame not to do something from a Gaeltacht.
Yeah.
Ballyvourney, County Cork, Nine White Deer. And something else that's kind of cool, which ties in an odd way with Ireland. It's not something to kind of be superbly delighted about, but it is a true fact. We have an incredibly high instance of celiac disease in Ireland. I think we're either the second or highest in the world in terms of people with celiac disease per capita. Good news is that this particular brewery specializes in gluten-free beers. So they've got a wide range of gluten-free beers. So it's Nine White Deer Brewery, and the one that we're tasting is Stag Ruagh, which is their Irish Red Ale. And it meets the standard for gluten-free, which is that the beer has less than 20 parts per million gluten in it. So it's tested to confirm that the level of gluten is so low that it wouldn't trigger a reaction in somebody who has an intolerance to gluten. Now, going to the other end of the scale, it's an Irish Red Ale. And the style of Irish Red Ale is that the backbone of the beer is classically malty, and they've brewed this beer to a traditional style. So you've got caramel biscuit coming through in the malt character. It's brewed as an ale, warm fermentation. Speaking to Gordon Lucy, the brewery's fermenting at around 17 degrees, and that brings through blackcurrant and fig flavour. And you actually get a kind of a fig roll type character with the combination of the malt and the fruit in it. The hop character is using a hop called East Kent Goldings, EKG, which gives a kind of an earthy nettle herb type character to the beer. And on this, in contrast to the IPAs, the hops are all there as a kind of an undertone, a background music to the malt, and the malt is central to the beer. We're talking about beer styles. This is brewed to what would be considered the classic Irish Red Ale style. And one of the things I had going back about 10, 15 years ago, lots of Irish breweries were really excited about hops. So they were saying, I'll do an Irish Red Ale, but I'll throw loads of hops in. And then it's not an Irish Red Ale because it's not meant to have loads of hops in it. What's actually happened is that style guidelines from BJCP, which is one of the organizations that does style guidelines, now since 2015 says an Irish Red Ale is really malty, but some brewers have done really hoppy versions, so you can have a hoppy version as well. And it just shows how the styles can kind of vary over time. The hoppy versions end up being somewhere in between what would be considered to be a red IPA, which is again a variation on the IPA and an Irish Red Ale. It kind of goes right into the middle of it. We're at 110 beer styles listed in BJCP, with the possibility for hybrid beer styles, which means that you can combine beer styles, but it's literally going into the thousands, and somebody needs to simplify it down because my liver can't take it anymore.
Actually, Connor says, if we abbreviate Indian Pale Ale to IPA, are we to do the same with Irish Red Ale? That makes me a little uncomfortable. Yes, it could be open for a misinterpretation. We'll move on to that's our Irish beer. Well, it was all Irish beers, obviously. And this is our Irish movie today. It's called The Winter Lake. Here's a clip.
It's my fault. I just kept moving us around. And every time it gets worse. You know, I always promised I'd keep him with me. No matter what, I wouldn't ditch him like my parents did to me. Was I wrong? Sorry.
You can't manage him on your own. There's no shame in that. There's just something up with his head. get you a drink, hmm?
There's just something up with his head. Sounds a bit disconcerting. Who are they talking about there?
They are talking about a teenage boy named Tom, who's played by Anson Boone, who's a very young up-and-coming British actor, who's moved to the west of Ireland from the UK with his mother, who's played by Charlie Murphy there, doing the English accent. And he is a troubled soul. He's very withdrawn. And I learnt, I suppose this is about the 8023rd thing I've learnt off watching films, Sean, but there's a whole thing called a Turlock, which is kind of a disappearing lake, as the title of the film suggests. It fills in the winter months when we have more rain. But when I was looking all this up, they're almost unique in the world to, they've a couple in Wales and places, but other than that, they're almost unique to the west of Ireland. So what an idea and a concept for a horror film or a psychological thriller. I thought it was a great idea, I have to say. So this boy, it's set in rural Sligo. I don't know which lake they're actually shooting on, but it's this troubled soul anyway, who's moved back from the UK, is told not to go near this lake because the waters can rise unexpectedly and it can be really dangerous. So you know what happens if they tell you don't go into the basement in a horror film, right? Yeah. That's the first thing he does. So he goes over there. I think this film shows its hand a little too early, so I'm not going to do that. But he goes to the lake, and because the waters have receded and come back up again, he has come across something very disturbing and, you know, quite macabre, actually. And it's a find that could have implications for people around him or for his community. And I think it's fair to assess, given the whole concept of the lake, that somebody has hidden something there thinking it'll be gone forever, you know. It's very good, this. And then that character who's talking there was played by Michael McElhattan, who is a neighbour of Charlie Murphy's, of this family who've moved back. And his daughter has a bit of a crush, who's played by Emma Mackey, who an English actress you might know from Sex Education. So his daughter, Holly, she lives across the field with him, and they have a bit of a crush on each other, and the dad is a bit worried about all of this. So it's a real kind of secrets and lies stuff. It is very good, this. I would say it's a little bit uneven in that I do think its reveals come a little bit too soon. But that is just me griping with what is a very good psychological thriller. And talk about using the Irish landscape as a set, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if you thought the dig looked very brown, you can see how damp this looks, I can tell you.
The mist
is falling, you know. It's very atmospheric in that regard. And I think we've gotten very good in recent years about telling stories, you know, the reveals I won't go into, but we're very good, I think, Irish filmmakers lately at telling stories through genre, you know, turning the famine into a revenge film, for example, Black 47. And I think this, you know, David Turpin and this writer, he's someone to watch out for, I think. That's his second feature now. And I think we're going to have a good market in psychological thrillers coming out of Ireland in the coming years. There's a few people doing it.
Yeah, it's a good idea. And just actually going back to Ray and the Last Dragon, someone's texting in to say my 13-year-old, 12-year-old, 7-year-old and 5-year-olds all enjoyed Raya and the Last Dragon. So there you go. It's perfect for that kind of spread. Finally, Fionnuala, this hardly constitutes news, I suppose, that Seth Rogen is selling weed.
Yes, not very surprising. He is a cannabis lifestyle business, that's a name, called Houseplant, just launched in the US. They were selling in Canada and the website ended up crashing yesterday due to demand. But he's fixed it now. It's him and his writing partner, Evelyn Goldberg. And you can buy home goods such as ashtrays and lighters. He said he's kind of honoured to be associated with weed. Sometimes people expect me to try and wiggle out from under being a very famous stoner or someone who in some ways is more famous for being someone who smokes weed than anything else that I have done. But truthfully, that is a worthy thing to me. I'm as proud of it as anything. So there you go. He's happy out.
But they are selling actual cannabis for delivery in California.
I don't think you'd be able to circumnavigate it over here. But for anyone over there,
Yeah.
The world's your oyster. The world is your weed ashtray.
Sounds like a premise, though, for a weed delivery guy would be a Seth Rogen film, really. Maybe we'll see that in the future. Fionnuala and Esther and Dean, thank you all very much. That's our lot for today.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Enjoy alcohol sensibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.